This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
All right. It's good to see you all here. It is time to get started with this breakout session, Business and Brotherhood, Rethinking the Relationship. Sometimes it can be easy to separate things from brotherhood from business and think of business as a separate thing from who we are, but it's really related. We're glad to have Gary Miller here with us from Idaho, and he cares deeply about this topic, and we look forward to what he has to share. So I'll turn the time over to Gary.
Good afternoon and welcome. Maybe after I get started, all of you wish you'd taken that coffee, I don't know. This topic is business and brotherhood and rethinking the relationship. One of the questions that I got repeatedly after writing the book, It's Not Your Business, was how do you hold the wealthy man accountable? Or how do you hold businesses accountable in brotherhood? And it soon became evident that that's a major question in a lot of people's minds. Is it seems like we have separated our businesses from our brotherhoods, and we kind of like it that way. It's just kind of keep it separate. And I'm going to ask a lot of questions during this talk. And some of them might stretch you a little bit, and that's okay. But we're going to look a little bit at church vision, because it really determines how accountable you want to be held and how much you're trying actually to reach out in your local community. But I want to just propose a question to begin with. What if God never intended for our businesses to be separated from our brotherhoods? What if actually God had in mind that we be held a little closer accountable to each other and to a vision? I'll look at four different areas. First, rethinking the local church vision. What is the purpose of church? Why are you going through the motions? What are you doing all this for? Why all this activity? And I'll ask this several times. I want you to think about this question. Do you actually believe that reaching out locally is possible? Do you see that as a possibility? Or is that something that happens over the water somewhere? Business, the good, the bad, and the ugly. From a perspective of brotherhood, we're going to look at both the good it's been and also the bad it's been to local brotherhoods and impact on brotherhood. Developing a united vision. Very important that leader brings everyone along with him as he moves down this road. And then finally, putting that vision into action. After a congregation develops a vision for where they want their congregation to go, then what? How do you actually implement that? We're going to walk through some potential steps. And I really hope we have some time for discussion at the end. We'll see if we can do that. Rethinking local church vision. Does the church have a clear vision and purpose? In other words, can you tell me why your church exists? Can you tell me why you don't go to church down the road? And furthermore, is it just defensive? Is your vision in your congregation, would you say it's defensive, trying to keep the world out? Is that primarily what you're interested in? Or does it include an element of offensive, actually reaching out to other people locally? How do you view that? Can leadership articulate that vision? Let's just imagine that leadership does have a clear vision. Are they capable, and are they articulating that vision to the rest? I want to start here with a look at how we determine position with regard to culture. I'm going to begin with a topic that we're all very familiar with. It has nothing to do with business, and that's dress. So, and all of us wrestle with this. If you look at this, there's a continuum across the bottom here. Over here you have groups that are non-assimilated. They are people who have maybe set up some rigid description of how you need to dress. It needs to be just like this. And it matters to them. Over here you have the assimilated, those who say, you know what, it doesn't matter really how you dress. It's not a big deal. And all of us are somewhere on this line. We're all plugged in somewhere along here. My question is this. Do you know why you are where you are? In other words, have you talked about this? Do you know why you're not over here or over here? Can you talk about that as a congregation? Now, there's good reasons for being on each of you. Maybe it's fear of the world. You just don't want to be like the world, so you're over here somewhere. Or maybe you really want to reach out, and that's why you've chosen to be over here. But my question, again, is not really where you are as much as do you know where you are? Can you explain that? Can you talk about it as a congregation? Now, as all of us are very aware, with this topic, we tend to move on this line. We tend to drift one way or another on this line. We struggle to maintain one spot and just stay there, partly because we have trouble articulating and talking about it and communicating. But there's two reasons I want to propose that we tend to drift along this line. First of all, we tend to move toward what we love and away from what we despise. So, for example, if you have an individual who has a love for the world and they want to look like the world, they will typically drift down toward the assimilated line. On the other hand, if you have someone who's reacting from that, they may keep going the other direction. My question again is, do you understand why you're doing what you're doing? We're going to use this principle to get later on in the talk as well. Maybe you're reacting. Maybe you were over here in an ultra-conservative congregation and you just had it. You'll usually find yourself slowly drifting down this line, or vice versa. But we do tend to move on this line. A good leader understands that, and he's able to articulate to his group why, if he's chosen to be right here, why he's not over here, and why he's not over here. He can share that. But it has to do with vision. And my question is this, wherever on this particular issue, are you here because of vision or because of reaction? And are you moving on this line because of clear vision that you have as a congregation, or do you tend to keep drifting because you're reacting to what others are doing in your past and all of this? But can you develop a vision as a congregation, and does that dictate to you where you are on this line with regard to, in this case, dress? Are members united and committed to that vision? So I asked earlier, do you have a vision of a church as to why you exist? The next question is, if I went up and down your pews and asked each person, would I get the same answer from all of you? Are you communicating well enough that you all would say the same thing? Is the role of the workplace being addressed? So as you think about your vision for your congregation, is the workplace being addressed in that? Or does occupations, business, wealth, just a little outside the comfort zone. We don't like to go there. We just kind of stick over here with other things. But where is that? Where is that in your church? How would you analyze that? Occupations. Is it part of your vision or necessary evil? It's something you do to make money, but you kind of wish it'd go away. Or have you actually brought that into your vision and made it part of your vision for your congregation? And are you clear enough on vision as to where you want to go as a group that you can speak into the wealthy businessman's life? Can you do that? If you have someone who tends to, his business just kept growing and he tends to spend all of his time on second homes, come on in, second homes in Florida and whatever, are you clear enough as a group to speak into his life, or is that again kind of nebulous and you kind of wish it would go away? Where are you at with regard to your occupations? What about relationship with the business world? Are you able to address differences in gifting in your congregation? Some men have some abilities and some have other abilities. Can you address that as far as where they are? We're going to look at a continuum here again. In the book, It's Not Your Business, I talked about several different kinds of people. The two extremes were Servant Sam. This is the employee of others. He just firmly believes that's where Jesus would be. He just thinks he'd work for somebody else and he'd never be wealthy. He can't imagine Jesus being in the corner office of a corporate building. He can't picture that. Production Paul is different. He likes the business world. I mean, he's thriving in this sense. He asks questions like, what would happen to all the rest of you if I didn't exist? Because you're working for me. So he asks these kind of questions. So, but again, on this spectrum, we have a lot of different options here. Are you able to talk about that? There's advantages to each of these models. There really is. Can you talk about that as a community? Or do you find yourself as a congregation just throwing an occasional stone at big business, just lobbing one over the wall at the few big businessmen and feeling kind of good about it and leaving it alone? Where are you at on this issue? And can your brotherhood help a man discover where he belongs on the spectrum? If a young man has something, is there a place he can go, either collectively in a larger group or a smaller group of men? Have you thought about that? What about a young man who obviously can just make things happen? Do you have a place he can go and talk to and not only bless him, but hold him accountable for how he uses that? What are you doing with those men? You know, this applies too. We tend to drift up and down this line. And it's very possible for a man to move toward a production pull simply because he loves the world. He just loves money and all the things it can do for him. Or it's a scorecard in his life, or whatever. He can tend to move down that line. Or the other direction. Maybe somebody just hates what they see in production pull, and they keep moving down here, and they really belong down here somewhere. Can you address that in your group? Mm. You have that capability. I remember one time I was in reaction mode probably at the time against the business, and I was helping out with the church plant. And if you want to find out the blessing of business, just try planting the church. You need business at that point. Now, some of you from Lancaster, you can't understand that concept, but you move out in the middle of Idaho somewhere, and you understand that having someone own a business is a very nice thing. I was in Washington at the time, and a brother came up to me and said, have you considered getting back into general contracting just to provide some jobs around here? Well, I'd been self-centered enough, I just was thinking about me. Very good question. I ended up getting back in, not just because of him, but I did. I ended up employing some men in the end. But can we talk about these things from a kingdom perspective, not just about wealth and who's doing what, but are we talking about the kingdom enough and what our purpose is to address these issues? Business, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I want to think about business a little bit as it relates to the brotherhood. Now, there's good in business, and we're going to get there eventually. We're going to start with the bad and the ugly. Just a little bit of the problem, and there's plenty of it we can point out. I'm going to go back a little ways. Let's look at church history a little bit. There's a fairly poor track record with business and wealth. When the church gets wealthy, it's not typically a healthy thing. And many times that fires up young radicals to go the other direction. Notice the preface to the Martyr's Mirror. This was written 100 years after severe persecution. It said, these are sad times in which we live. Nay, truly, there is more danger now than in the time of our fathers who suffered death for the testimony of the Lord. He goes on, hence arises that shameful and vast commerce, which extends far beyond the sea into other parts of the world, but which notwithstanding cannot satisfy those who love it. Numerous large expensive houses, great dinners, lavish banquets, and wedding feasts. Now at this time there were poor living among them too. Big spread here. He's saying it's not a good thing that's happening. It's not a very pretty thing. It's a cry of a man that's saying persecution was safer than this. This isn't good. That's part of the ugly that happens with business and wealth. And frankly, again, our track record has not been very well, not very good, not very pretty. It becomes a distraction to gifted men. I think most of us can think of men who have tremendous natural abilities, and they're finding almost all their fulfillment in the business world. They're just pouring themselves into bigger and bigger business. We don't quite know what to do with that man because we can't say it's bad. We kind of need the money, but it's not real good either. And so we just watch them, instead of focusing on the kingdom, they're over here just going after business. That's part of the bad. Sometimes, especially with men who are not called to leadership but have gifts of administration, find that as an outlet for all that energy, all that ability they have. Production mindset, potential enslavement. Type A personality loves a challenge. They love to be told it can't be done and go after it. They love to look at a profit and loss sheet from last year and say, let's do better this year. Let's go after it. There's something in men that likes that. There's a friend of mine who owned a cabinet shop, very hard worker. One time he had a bunch of plywood land on him. And I think it was within 2 days laying in a hospital bed, he already came up with another business. That's just his personality. That's a gifting. But it has to also be held accountable in some way. Comparing ourselves among ourselves, it's amazing. Pecking order in congregations happens pretty quick. Who has the most employees? Who has the most acres of land? It's a scorecard to keep track of it. That's one of the sad things about, it's the ugly part of what happens with business in a brotherhood. The golden rule. I've called the golden rule, it's just whoever has the gold makes the rules. And that's a sad thing many times in congregations. But you find someone who's successful, and if it's not tailored properly and used properly, it can be very damaging within a brotherhood. I know of congregations where about half the congregation or more works for one man. And maybe he's a leader as well. Who's going to cross him in brotherhood meeting? it becomes very, and that's part of the ugly, because we're not talking about the vision here of where we're going. What about the positive? What about training and nurturing of youth? Someone besides their father telling them what to do. Tremendous possibilities. It's a tremendous blessing to have a good environment for young men to be taught in. Work ethic in a post-agricultural culture. What about using business as a way to create a structured environment? We don't have the farm anymore. I've had some calls from old men who lament the fact that it was so nice on the farm, such a blessing to the young men. We don't have that today. Can we talk about that, though? Can we talk about how we can use our businesses for young men to develop them? Developing leadership ability. You know, there's a lot of elements in business that can transfer right into the church in terms of leadership, but there's some abilities that can be abused as well. But I think of, there's a man that I've worked with some, he has probably 90 employees, and he uses on-site in his factory, he holds seminars and teaches the men he's working with just how to be leaders in the community. He told me this, he said, it may benefit my business some, but what I'm really after is this. I want these men to go home, back into their communities, and be leaders in their homes, and be leaders in their churches. And I'm trying to develop them here. So he's taking them through material. He pays them by the hour to do this, and he's trying to send them back out again. Can we think about ways like that to use our businesses as a platform to develop the men among us? Outreach, potential platform in community. Has your church discussed this as a possibility? What you can be doing with business to actually reach out in your community. You know, if you start thinking about it, a lot more happens. There's a friend of mine who has a business, a little furniture business. He was telling me, he called me the day it happened, I think it was. He said, there's an individual who'd been coming in and buying things from him, and he could tell the man was burdened down with something. He had a problem. He was trying to think how to reach out to this man, he was kind of a gruff fella. He said he was loading a piece of furniture for him one day, and a piece caught on something and snapped a little piece of wood off. And he said, it just came to me just like that. This is the perfect opportunity. He told this man, listen, let's glue this piece up. It's going to take about 30 minutes. Why don't you come in, we'll have a cup of coffee, and let's just talk for a while. He said before that man left, he was in tears. The man had all kinds of stresses in life. He'd been through the Vietnam War, and he said he just poured out his heart sitting there talking. You know why it happened? It happened because he was thinking about how to use his business to reach out. It never would have happened if he was just trying to make a dollar. But he was thinking about it. Can you talk about that within your church? Can you discuss that? Can you bring that up and talk about the potential? Outreach, providing entry-level jobs. If you start reaching out in your community, you're probably going to reach out to dysfunctional people. That's probably who's going to respond. Do you have the time to reach out to them? And do you understand the blessing that a job can be in some of these people's lives? We have an individual in our community, a lady. She has had a very dysfunctional life. And she, one of our brothers in the congregation offered her a job of just pulling nails out of boards. She told me one time with tears, you'll never know how much it means to me to see a board with new nails. I've accomplished something. I actually did something. We grew up in structured homes. We have no comprehension of what it's like to grow up in a home where it's chaos. She spent most of her time on a couch watching the television. And she still has a ways to go. She's still struggling with God. But we can bring these people in and walk with them in business. We have that potential there. But we have to think about it and talk about that to actually make it happen. Funding for the kingdom. This is an obvious one we all talk about. I think it's personally overrated many times. I think we should use our businesses many times more in how we operate the business than just in the funding. And I want you to think about this. Do you think the Lord is actually excited about you and your community driving a hard bargain and making $1,000, losing a reputation there, but sending it overseas in tracks? I don't think so. We should be operating our businesses, and the way we operate should manifest something radically different to our culture and community around us. Developing a united vision. How can a congregation discuss and develop a vision that addresses business? First of all, leaders must take risk. This is a hard one. You know, we all live in America, and we're all feel a little guilty about how we live. We know what it's like, especially this group here. We know what other cultures are like. We know we're highly blessed. And so to stand up and start talking about materialism, it's like putting a big target on you. Mm-hmm. You know you're going to get hit. And you know that, I say this sometimes in seminars, every person here has already wondered how I live at home. That's just what happens when you start talking about it. Because we all feel a little guilty. But can we go ahead and admit that we're not always sure how we should live, but let's communicate and let's keep pushing toward the goal instead of just not talking about it. That can be very risky for leaders, especially if they feel like the congregation's barely hanging together the way it is. Honesty with where we are. Can we stop and admit there might be higher ground? This is especially hard in older, more established congregations, but be willing to admit God might be calling us higher than where we are right now. Appreciating diversity of gifts. Can we talk about vision enough to where the servant Sams actually appreciate the production Pauls? And can we have the production Pauls eventually appreciate the servant Sams? Not because they're making them money, but because they're actually doing what God has made them to do. They're part of this. We're all just using our gifts. There's nothing that we have that we didn't receive. Can we verbally bless each other? Accepting and adapting to context. Now I want to talk here just a little bit about when you're trying to move your congregation, about assessing what you're dealing with. Now I want to look at two different ends of the spectrum. First of all, a church plant vision. When you have a church plant vision, you have young people, it's exciting, and everything's on the table. I met with a group here a while back who was getting ready to go to another state and plant a church, and it was like three young men, and they were on fire, and I mean, they were able to talk about anything. You just bring it up, and they can just... That's one issue. There's another one, though. That's an old church vision. What about an old congregation? It's been around for 100 years. Things have been going on and on the same for a long time. How are you going to talk about that? How are you going to talk about vision in that setting? It's entirely different from a new church plan. Here's my struggle, though, with old churches. Is many times in old churches, and I'm going to speak like a young radical for a minute, in an old church, you'll find dairy farmers, for example, that are willing to stay up all night with a cow to make sure that cow makes it. But where are the people willing to stay up all night with a struggling person? A dysfunctional person. That's what it takes. It takes a lot of time and prayer with them. Why would we do it with a cow, but we don't do it with that person, or whatever your business is? I think it goes back to vision. Why are we here? What are we doing? What has God called us to do? Why do we exist as a church? One of the, had a lady in our home, it's probably been a year ago, maybe more now, very dysfunctional background, and she told me this. She looked at me, and I can still picture her in our living room. She said, you know, you don't really know much about me. And I said, no, that's probably true. She'd been coming around for maybe a year or so. She said, let me tell you something. So I think she was feeling a little guilty, like she was acting like she was kind of like us, and she really wasn't. She wanted to show me how bad she really was. And she said, do you know that I just recently started brushing my teeth every 2 days? She said, I hang my toothbrush up in the shower to remind myself. She said, well, I grew up in a setting where it was totally dysfunctional. Now, you have to understand that that's about as far away from me as you can get. I mean, that's just like, I can't even comprehend this. And that's what happens sometimes when we start rubbing shoulders with people who are dysfunctional, and they're all, I don't care where you live in America, they are very close to you. People just like this. We got involved in the foster care system years ago, and I had no idea of what all is right around us. But we live different lives, and my plea today is to reach over that line and touch people's lives on the other side. There's people that desperately need what you've been blessed with and don't even know you have it. Tremendous need out there. Exploring what God might have in mind. We like to think about vision, but what might God have in mind? Let's take a little time and look at this one. First of all, local evangelism. Do you view that as pointless acts of futility? Do you honestly, deep within you, believe that there are people around you, close to where you live, who really want what you have? Or do you not believe that? Those are questions we need to ask ourselves. Now, sometimes we're involved and we have little habits and we do things and require things that maybe they're not scriptural. Maybe we need to go back. But let's believe in what we have. Let's make sure it's scriptural and get behind the vision we have as a church. encouraging and tempering visions of young men. I want to say this. All of us as men have at least been young men at one time. And I know what it's like when the world's black and white. It's just clear and things need to change right now. But I want to say this. God can speak through young men. And older men need to understand that. Now, I'm going to qualify that in just a minute. But understand that God can speak through young men. I want to look just a little at a business, a typical business cycle, and compare it then to churches. You know, a business usually starts because there's a need over here, and it starts with a lot of risk, a lot of energy, just pouring into it to make it happen. But it keeps growing, and it finally gets up here, and it focuses on sales and marketing, and finally you get to enjoyment of profitability. Get up there, you're finally over the hump. You're finally really enjoying this. What happens next is very important. Because typically, there's an intense fear of risk in protecting that investment. No more risk taking. And if you look at a multi-generational business, this is really true. And multi-generational churches are the same. They tend to go through this cycle. It doesn't have to be this way, but this is the natural tendency unless we start communicating and think about what we're actually doing. Now, young men see this. They see this right here and they say, we're going downhill. Things are not good. And they usually speak that into older men, and older men push back a little bit. But if you're a young man, I want to challenge you with a quote from G.K. Chesterton. And I love this quote. There's so much truth in this quote. He said this, the reformer is always right about what is wrong. However, he's often wrong about what is right. In other words, he sees the problem. He can identify the problem. And it's true. He's seeing the problem. But his solution isn't very good. The old men sometimes can't see the problem, but they've got good solutions. And if you can get the two together, you can have progress. And that's why God put both in the church. And too often we split churches even between these two, and we can't create anything cohesive. But they both need each other. Mm-hmm. And if, as young men, if you can see that, and as old men, if you can see that, we actually need each other. Something else that happens in business growth. This is another chart. And here on the left, is how a business starts. And you have high flexibility and low controllability. In other words, everything's fluid. Everything can be changed. You read about some of the dot-coms in San Jose that started out. And some of those are huge multi-billion dollar businesses now. But they started out with discussions sitting on 5-gallon buckets. I read about one where they said they made their biggest decision sitting on the stairs during break. And everything was up for grabs. It was all just, yeah, what about this? Yeah, let's do that. Everybody's going all different directions. Very low controllability, but high flexibility. As time goes on, you start to get more controllability. As things begin to work in jail, you create SOPs, and you start writing down how things should be done, and you start losing flexibility, but you get controllability. And you have to. You can't stay over here all the time. But at some point, you cross this line, and you get rigid, unable to move. As a business gets older, you end up over here. And then things can't shift. It's hard to move anything. And again, this doesn't have to happen, but that's our tendency. If we can at least understand what normally happens, I think it will help us avoid that. Enhancing family through ministry and business. Agriculture was good at this. The family farm was wonderful. It was good for business and also good for youth. Can we work toward that in business? What about responsibility for what we provide? If there's only one question I get about business, it's what kinds of things should we be doing? And I'm going to ask some questions on the screen here. I'm not going to answer them, but I want you to think about the questions we should be able to ask in a brotherhood or at least in a group of men, where if you own a business, you should be able to bring this up and talk about it. Questions like this. How much responsibility do we have, such as, what about building luxurious homes, extravagant kitchens? What about all that? How far down that road should we go? It's a very common question. What about building liquor stores, building expensive RVs, on and on? What about that? I had a situation years ago as a commercial contractor, and I had a man call me up, a developer one time, and he said, I was wondering, would you build a store for me here in town? And he told me what corner it was. And I think I had heard something about possibly a liquor store going in there. But just something in the back of my mind. And so I said, what kind of store is it? He said, retail. And I said, okay. I said, what kind of retail? Okay, we're just buying and selling stuff. He just kind of, brushed it off. And I said, I kept pushing this a little more. And finally I said, are you going to be selling liquor? He said, well, we might sell a little bit of liquor. Actually, that's all it was going to be. I found out later it was a liquor store. And I told him, I said, you know, I don't think I want to get involved in this. I don't think I want to help our community move in that direction. I'd just rather not. Well, I didn't think you would, but I thought I'd try anyway. So he obviously had a line in his mind, even as an unbeliever. He knew there were some things that you would do and some things you wouldn't do. But again, where are those lines? And can we talk about that even as a group? What about raising grapes, tobacco, corn for Jack Daniels, homes for a homosexual lifestyle, divorce situation? What about building Mormon churches, military project? There's all kinds of these questions. Can we talk about this? Now, I'm going to say something else here. I think it needs to come right on the heels of this. And it's the next point. We need to be able to accept different lines. We won't all have exactly the same position. But my plea is, can we at least communicate and not just suppose everything about each other? Can we actually talk about these things? Is there a safe place within your brotherhood for someone to go with these kinds of questions? Relationships, enabling businessmen to share struggles. You know, being a businessman, and especially a larger businessman, can be a very lonely place to be. It shouldn't be, though. We should be able to bring those men in and talk and communicate, and both bless them and hold them accountable. Putting the vision into action, last point here. One of the things it's going to take, I think, even with leaders, is continued polishing of the target. Where are we going? Why are we doing what we're doing? What is our vision? Why are we here? Why do we exist? Those kind of questions, leaders should be asking that and getting buy-in and get communication from everyone. Make sure we're on the same page. Financial transparency. This is a big one. How much is healthy? How much should we be revealing? Now, this is going to really depend on your vision as a church, and that's why I started out there. If your vision as a church, actually, I'm not asking about what you say it is, I'm asking about what it actually is. If your vision is to produce more nice families, it probably doesn't matter how much transparency you have. But if your vision is to reach out in your local community and use business to do that, then you have to understand that one bad business deal dooms the whole vision. And it becomes very, very important. So you have to first establish a vision. Let's think about this a little bit. Where on this spectrum should you be? Don't ask, don't tell, or total transparency. This might be openness only in major crisis. So we're not going to say anything about my business. You're not going to know anything about my business until we get to a point of almost bankrupt. Then we'll talk. That'd be on one end. Or revealing debt load. Some congregations do this. Once a year, everyone will reveal to the deacon how much they owe. So there's some transparency. Moving on down the line, counsel before getting into debt. Counsel before large investments. I know of congregations that $20,000 before you spend $20,000, you have to ask somebody. And there's some that have total 1040 transparency. Everything's out in the board. Everything's open. Where are you at on this? And where should you be at? You know, there is advantages and disadvantages all down this line. And again, I'm not pleading for any one of these. I'm just saying, can you communicate as a group and talk about this and decide on something? Calling men higher in the workplace. You know, a large percentage of our lives are going to be held in occupations. If we're going to use that, then we need to be able to reach out We need to be able to communicate on these issues. I want you to notice Paul's words to Titus. Notice the occupations here in this. It says, the Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, slow bellies, or idle gluttons. Wherefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith. And then exhort servants to be obedient to their own masters, and to please them well in all things, not answering again, that they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in all things. There's other verses, we can think of other verses as well. But notice these are specifically what happens in the workplace. Now, I want to say this. Don't tell your people to go out and pass out tracts in your community if you're not diligent in the workplace. That's counterproductive. Accountability in pursuit and use of wealth. I want you to notice a passage very familiar to us. 1 Timothy 6. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. Charge them that are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. I want you to notice something. These are strong words, not to the wealthy. They're strong words to Timothy. In other words, our leaders need to be admonished. This is a challenge to leadership. They need to be involved enough and able to talk to men who are wealthy. Can your leaders do that? Can they give specific admonition? But it goes on. The blessing of the gift of business administration. Timothy wasn't called just to warn them. Notice this. He's told to encourage them, that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come. In other words, don't just throw stones at them. Tell them what they should be doing, how they should be using that. He was giving this to the rich. Timothy was to tell the rich this because they were the ones who actually could do this. They had the capability. Accountability partners for business owners. I want to propose that wide open transparency of everything involved with everybody's finances may not always be a good idea, especially if you don't have a clear vision of where you're going, and especially if you have young men who aren't mature enough to understand even how much capital it takes to operate a business. That may not be a wise move, but can we at least arrive somewhere where we can work at this as a community? And maybe sometimes a wealthy man should be held accountable by three men or two men. They can sit down with him occasionally. I know situations where that happens, where they sit down and ask hard questions. How are you doing? What's happening with this? Because they care about him. They want him to be a blessing to their brotherhood. Redemptive in crisis, looking for opportunities. You know, the church, its goal is to provide something that's totally different, radically different to the world around. And many times that happens in business struggles and difficulties, in showing them a different way of, I can tell you stories of that, and all of you could too, of businesses where they were given it was a bad situation, but they use it to redeem themselves and show how Christianity acts and how it's lived out in a bad situation. Conclusion, I'd love to have some questions to answer, so think a few questions if you can. I'm just challenging us today to rethink this whole area of business and brotherhood. As you go back to your local congregations, understand there's higher ground. I think there is in most of our congregations. There's places we could grow in this. See business as a platform, and I'll talk about this tomorrow in another talk, but see business as a platform for spreading the gospel. It's a tremendous interface with the public around us. Any questions? And hopefully answers.
Yeah, I'm just curious what your thoughts are on somebody who's in a financial hardship, but it's very clear that they've made poor business and financial choices that clearly led them to that place, and sometimes they're not fully aware of that. How do you recommend speaking to them about that, or helping them financially to make those decisions? It's hard to make those, to give money almost even to help them if you know they've made such poor choices to get there.
Yeah, handing out more money to someone who's already using it poorly is probably not a good thing. It's really hard to move someone if they don't understand their need, if they don't see a need themselves. Usually you have to decide, is it a money problem or a management problem? It's almost always a management problem in some way. And so when you start giving money to a management problem, it usually compounds the problem. But trying to get them to see their own need is really... and that's hard, because some people don't see it. Some people just really don't.
Spoke about accountability, and I hear you calling the church, especially leaders, to call the businessmen to accountability. What responsibility does a businessman have to make himself accountable?
Very good question. One of the questions, I interviewed a lot of very large businessmen. And one of the questions I would ask them before I wrote the book, It's Not Your Business, I would ask them, would you like more accountability? And almost always I would get silence. So I would probe into that a little bit. Why is that? Why don't you want accountability? And some of them, well, let me back up. Another question I would ask them is how much do you make? How much does the business make, if they were willing to talk about this? And how much do you take home? And how much do your top managers make? How much spread is there to what you're taking home, what they're taking home? Anyway, some of them obviously didn't want to talk about it because they were taking home more than they knew. They were uncomfortable with how much they were taking home themselves. Others were uncomfortable, though, because they had young men who just didn't trust them and they were fearful of probing in. And sometimes there's even individuals who have a management issue like we just heard about who think it's a money problem. They have more money that take care of the problem. Usually most congregations have one of those, it seems like. And if they know that there's a bunch of money sitting over here in a business for capital expenses, it's a struggle for them because they always think, well, why don't you give me some to take care of my problem? So there's legitimate reasons why there's a fear. I think this vision is going to have to be taught to young people and carry it up as they get older. I gave a talk a week of teaching on this at Faith Builders a year ago. At the end of the last session, I asked the class, how many of you think that what you've heard is doable? And they all raised their hand. I said, how many of you think in the next 5 years is doable in your congregation? And they were only one or two finally raised their hands. So it's something where we're going to start thinking differently over time. We can't just all run home and change everything around. But we seem to be stretching our mind. That's all I'm after, really, is start thinking. Anyone else?
I have my opinion a little bit is that when business is rolling well, production's going, and the non-believer or a client, customer, or a salesman to that remarks about what's going on. And I, in the past, have always said, at that point, don't backpedal. Because you put God principles into place, and they're working, and this is what's happening. And then when that comes, you say, show your soul. Is it okay at that point to take Matthew account and saying that if you see your good works and glorify your Father, that you talk about it's overwhelming to you how God has the employees, what they've done, and how well they work, and compliment, not for your own shirt, but remark about how good God has been. Is that okay?
We don't need to be. We act like sometimes that profit is something that is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, God has profit all around us. I mean, if you, I went to Ukraine one time and given a talk one time, and they have because of communism, have pushed back towards wrong profits. Wrong. You know, just had pastors say, can you show me one verse in the Bible that it's okay to charge somebody more than what you paid for it in retail sales? They can't envision. If you buy milk for $1 a gallon and you sell for $1.20, you just rip that person off 20 cents. You have that mindset. Profit's just bad. So I ask them, how many of you would keep planting corn if every time you planted one seed, you got one back? You know, God has demonstrated profit's a good thing. I mean, the abuse of profit is a problem. So we shouldn't be ashamed if a business makes money. It should make money if it's done ethically. That's God's blessing on it, really.
You say more about work ethic in a post-agricultural era.
Yeah, one of our struggles, I think, in our culture has been there were a lot of blessings we've lost. I think it was Frank Reed 2 years ago made a comment that one of the best things his parents ever did is never let him sleep past 5 o'clock in the morning because they had a dairy farm and he had to get up. You know, he created life habits. But I've wondered about that with regard to businesses. Are there ways that, so if I have a business and your children are coming and working for me, that I can be a blessing to them by how I structure my business to hold them accountable? Sometimes in the Anabaptist community, there's a lot of travel going on, a lot of freedom going on that may not be good for the child. But because they're a Mennonite, we'll let them go. That's not always a blessing. So can we think about that in terms of not just making money, and not just providing jobs that actually do the same thing that farming used to do? It was actually a good thing. It was a structure that it was a blessing. I wanted that for my children. I wanted them to work for somebody else for a while because I wanted them to work for somebody that would fire them if they didn't perform.
I think we see even a man that's not a Christian but operates in godly principles that he's blessed monetarily. So maybe that's not just a sign of our walking with God necessarily if we're blessed materially, but the principles apply for even an ungodly man.
That's right. The teaching in Proverbs, that teaching works in Japan, it works in wherever, whether you're a Christian or not.
Right.
It's just how you make the material world work for you.
So it's not necessarily a sign how spiritual you are if you're wealthy.
Right. Yeah. We're out of time. Okay, 1 minute, I guess. You got it. 1 minute questions?
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.